Thank you so much, Joanne. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this last session of the day. Hopefully, we'll have some really great information. Emory's already shared great information with you. I'm going to take you to a data set that is funded through HRSA, through the Maternal and Child Health Bureau, and talk a little bit more about emergency department use of kids with developmental disabilities from that data set. So I have no relationship to disclose. So I think this brief from the National Center for Health Statistics came across my desk a while ago, and I, you know, this is looking using the NHIS data, looking at emergency department use among children in the U.S. And I think, you know, it showed still some alarming results. You know, I summarize for you here. Emergency department use is the highest among older adults and children, so that's not surprising. The 2012 NHIS data indicated that 80% of the children 0 to 17 years old visited the emergency room at least once in the past year. And, you know, for those of us that are working on Affordable Care Act funded programs, we have been, you know, reiterating that the pivotal aim of the preventative care services that we support through Affordable Care Act is to reduce that emergency department use cost. And so, you know, with these trends, you know, we want to be able to see, you know, is the programs that we're implementing through the funds that that we're dispersing for Affordable Care Act can really help and support the goals of reducing this in the long run. So we really need to understand the reasons behind families with children choosing to seek emergency room care rather than the less expensive office-based or outpatient care. I think the other compelling graphic that report showed was that children with Medicaid coverage were more likely to have at least one ER visit than the past year, really alluding to the fact that, you know, health insurance coverage may still present challenges in healthcare access. So, this is a paper that I collaborated with folks from MCHB. We had a director there that was a former ER doc, and she was working in an emergency room in Philadelphia and had a lot of parents come seek with children with developmental disabilities that would come and say, hey, I would like to, I would like Dr. Durham to work with my kid, to care for my kids. And so Terry approached me as we, you know, were looking at the data for the 2005-2006 National Survey of Children's Health Special Healthcare Needs, and she said, you know, is there any way that we can find out what's happening nationally so that we can try to help these parents and these families? So from the research that we did before, children with developmental disabilities were at risk for emergency room visits due to chronic medical needs, so that's not a surprise to any of us. But that the data from 2005 to 2006 indicated that children with developmental disabilities, who had, you know, greater than one emergency department use per year, were less likely to have medical home and to receive coordinated and family-centered care. And then the other piece, key finding that we found was that children with developmental disability who had three or more emergency department use were less likely to have access to usual source of care, healthcare services. So, you know, we had a second, or following the 2005-2006, we did the third iteration of the National Survey for Children's Special Healthcare Needs. So having that data, you know, and having access to that data, we thought, well, let's try to take a look at this again and see where the children are. So this is a secondary data analysis of the 2009-2010 National Survey for Children's Special Healthcare Needs. It's a national representative cross-sectional data set of children 0 to 17 years old. We did bivariate and multivariate analysis to ascertain the association between emergency department use and the healthcare quality indicators for children with developmental disabilities. Those of you that are familiar with the National Survey of Children's Special Healthcare Needs, there are over a dozen of health quality indicators that our data resource center maintains that information for the folks in the sample for children's special health care needs. And so we took a look at that for the subset of children with developmental disabilities. We used SAS to account for the complex sample design, and then the Taylor series linearization method was chosen for the variance estimation. So there is a question. There's the question that we use within the survey is that there, it asked, during the past 12 months, how many times did the subject child visit a hospital emergency room? And then the parent or whoever the parent or guardian who reported can enter, can tell the folks the number of visits and the response. In our particular study, we went ahead and dichotomized the response for the multivariate logistic regression analysis. And for developmental disability, there is a series of conditions that's asked within the survey. So the question is, to the best of your knowledge, does the subject child currently have blank condition? And then the response of a condition that are in developmental disabilities were included in the analytic sample. So the healthcare quality indicator, I didn't pick all of them. I picked ones that we had found, you know, previously in our paper, and I just wanted to delve into some more to see where folks were. And so I picked family-centered care, their ability to claim referrals, family support, and then whether or not they felt they met the need for healthcare services and assistive technology. And the way they characterized healthcare services were things such as PT, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, mental health, substance abuse services, preventative and other dental care. Assistive technology included things such as eyeglasses, hearing aids, mobility aids, communication aids, and durable medical equipment. Okay. So taking a look at the social demographic picture of the folks that buy emergency department use, first use the categories that were in that enhanced report, zero emergency department use, one emergency department use, and then greater than two emergency department use. We see that, you know, there is different patterns for folks in the different household income or household poverty level. We see that, you know, those that are 400% above the federal poverty level, that really only 11.7% of the kids there have greater than or equal to two emergency department use. But we see 40.8% of those that are below the 100% federal poverty level going to having more emergency department use visits. And then race, ethnicity, I don't know if folks can see it, but the red bar, the really tall red bars are the non-Hispanic white samples in the survey. And you see that there is a gradual decline from zero emergency department use to greater than or equal to two emergency department use. And then you see a increase for non-Hispanic black population. So those, you know, racial ethnic disparities and the socioeconomic disparities are continue to show itself. And then, you know, again, you know, I was very interested, you know, given the NHIS report, whether or not, you know, the insurance picture for children with developmental disability was similar. And you'll see that the red on is the folks with public insurance, and, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know if it's visible from the folks in the back, but those with zero emergency department use, 32.7% of them had public insurance. But as you go to greater than or equal to two emergency department use, you see that 58.7%, they're the largest proportion of those that have the greater than or equal to two emergency department use. So that insurance, having public insurance, that disparity that we saw across all children in the U.S., we see it in the children with developmental disabilities as well. In terms of family, parent households, there I took a look at, so the survey has two parent households, single mom households, and then other households. And so took a look at, you know, just children with developmental disability from single mother households were sort of more likely to have that greater than or equal to two emergency department use. So you see the red for the single mom households increasing for the increase in emergency department use as well. So looking at the multivariate regression model, so for the quality indicators that I selected, so there is an increased odds, 1.3 of lack of access to family-centered care, 1.64 increased odds of problems obtaining referrals, 1.50 increased odds for unmet needs for family support service, and then those that were parents or guardian reported greater than or equal to two unmet needs for the healthcare service and equipment from the list that I had shared with you earlier, it was a 1.8 increased odds. And then the unmet specialist care needs was 1.71. So in terms of, you know, I think we started talking about, you know, how do you address sort of reduction strategies. I think providing family-centered care is continues to be really, really important for parents with children with developmental disabilities. Really, through that establishment and maintenance of a strong family-to-provider partnership that really is built upon mutual trust and respect. And so we're still continuing to see that to be a problem for our families with children with developmental disabilities. And I think, you know, in terms of family supports for parents, our parents are with children with developmental disabilities are asked to do so much, from advocate, being caregiver, to you know, medical home. I think, you know, those of us that have come and touched lives of parents with developmental disabilities, we know how much they have to do in order to get the medical care and the education that their child needs. And so I think, you know, the more that we continue to invest in supporting parents through family supports continues to be very important, whether that be, you know, information, health, education, peer-to-peer support. And I think there's a great need for support for clinical provider education. I think in Gloria's presentation from the CHEERS Forum, she talked about the need for that workforce training and that we need to strengthen our workforce investments so that they know how to work with this population. That continues to be a need. So that, you know, the training can really facilitate that effective referral and then the receipt for the specialist care. And then I think, you know, finally, you know, if there are, if the receipt of therapies, assistive technology, and other health services can help support the child and prevent them from having to go to the emergency room, that certainly is a worthy investment for that. So I think policy implications, I touched upon this a little bit already, that healthcare coverage does not equate with access to healthcare. I think most folks in the room probably would agree with me. I think we know that the Medicare program has long struggled to attract participating physicians, you know, whether that be primary care or specialists. And, you know, the most recent data from the National Ambulatory Medical Care Survey says that 33% of the primary care physicians did not accept new Medicaid patients in 2011-2012. So that's an alarming statistic for us to think about that, you know, whether or not, you know, saying that health insurance coverage, expansion of coverage doesn't mean that the work is done. There needs to, more needs to be done. And then I think the other piece I wanted to share is sort of the design of a comprehensive primary health care. So in Joanne's introduction, she mentioned that I work at HRSA. I work in the bureau that funds the federally qualified health centers. And so we have been investing quite heavily in patient-centered medical home transformation and primary care that have its roots in children's special health care needs world. You know, I think in Emily's presentation, she talked about the fact that, you know, the mental health folks and the substance abuse are going into this other pocket while we're heavily investing in primary care integration with behavioral health, including substance abuse, with that additional oral health, public health support. And so I think there are things that we can do in the community, and I think I tend to be very positive about the change that we can put in place in the community for folks that that need these services. And I think we've also put some money behind it, so I wanted to share that with you. So in fiscal year 2015, we've provided $51 million for a mental health services expansion, so really helping our health centers look at what that behavioral health integration looks like. So how do we facilitate that warm handoff? You know, how can we conduct some of the screening and the follow-up to really support patients that need both primary care and behavioral health services? We continue to look at what we call quality improvement awards. So we collect 16 clinical outcome measures across all health center. If you improve upon it, we incentivize you. We've done that 2 years in a row. And this year we try to bring a live triple aim in this quality improvement award. So we had created a framework for access, value, and quality of care for the first time. New access points, I think there will be continued to be more health centers across the country. We fund them in May and in August, and we will again fund them next year as well. And then we also funded national cooperative agreements to help support and provide technical assistance to our health centers around the areas of workforce, oral health integration, and also health information technology. This expanded services, $350 million, you might be asking, what are you expanding? So we're expanding vision services, oral health services, pharmacy services, and then we have, we put our money behind the enabling services, and we said that in this formula grant, you can put 20% to enabling services. I don't think I've ever seen that kind of investment in wraparound services to help support case management, translation, transportation services. So I think there's a lot of opportunity and promise in that. And then I think patient-centered medical home is a really big part of my life right now. We have both, you know, 2 years in a row supported health centers. If you successfully achieve patient-centered medical recognition by our definition, we will give you money with no strings attached. So what the health centers have been telling me is that they use that money for to continue their transformation effort, to work on quality improvement, and they can do quality improvement projects for all of their patients and not just those that are in particular managed care programs. So that's sort of the wonderful anecdotes that I like to take back to our headquarters and tell folks that, you know, these funds that we disperse can make a difference in that community. And then we are funding healthcare, health infrastructure investment programs because we want to modernize the health center facilities that provide the service. We want health centers to become the provider of choice in their community. So I think just very quickly, strengths and limitations. You know, this data set allows us to take a look at emergency department use among children with developmental disabilities and social demographic disparities, and we continue to see those disparities in this 2010 survey. I think that, you know, the survey itself has healthcare quality indicators that, you know, are that allow the linkage to higher emergency department use, and it really helps inform the policy development to enhance the support for families, which are very, very much needed. And then, you know, this is a nationally representative survey. Some of the limitations, it is RDD design survey. So, you know, there's learned limitations around landline use and the cell phone coverage that we're able to capture within for the respondents. The survey design is cross-sectional, so no causal inference can be inferred, and then there's no follow-up questions on the causes of emergency department use, which I think Emily's project was able to look at that more and understand sort of what the root cause is. And so that's certainly something that continues to be a limitation of this data set. This is my contact information. Thank you so much.